First, as 2017 comes to a close, we wanted to take time to look back at some of the best books of the year. Whether you're a fan of fiction, memoirs, history, or other genres, every category had some standouts this year. And we want to hear what you think. You can share some of your favorite books of 2017 by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Joining us now to talk about some of the best books of 2017 is Mark Rotella. He's a senior editor at Publishers Weekly, where he also hosts their PW radio show. He's also an author and a board member of the National Book Critics Circle. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great to talk about books, especially in between holidays.
I agree. I've been looking forward to this segment all week. So, Mark, how would you characterize 2017 in a literary sense?
So, you know, we've got a lot of, I'm going to talk about fiction and nonfiction. In nonfiction, we have books on immigration. We have books about maybe fake news coming in not so much the in throughout history and now. And then we talk about, we have a lot of extreme words like extreme and fear in titles in dealing with cities. So that's what we have there. When we talk about fiction, we have a lot of books by, or at least maybe several books by people who have writers who've gotten awards before, Hari Kunzru and Jasmine Ward, quite a few others. So that's what we've got right now. What would you like to talk about?
Well, let's start with fiction. And one of your favorite fiction picks this year was Pachinko by Min-Jin Lee. Tell us about that novel.
So, first of all, Min-Jin is happens to be a friend of mine, but I've been following her writing as well. This one takes place pre-World War II Korea, and this is, you know, we talked about immigration just a little bit ago, but this one takes place in Japan by Korean immigrants moving there, and it follows the path of two brothers as they're trying to make their lives as immigrants in Japan. And it's a grand epic novel, and it's just really delightful, beautifully written. And that was one of my favorite books this year.
And that Pachinko ended up on a lot of best of 2017 lists this year. Why do you think it had such broad appeal to so many critics?
I think because of the immigration point of it, and about with families, and not just families, it adds in another twist to the family dynamic. And when you put it, you know, it always says when there's books about war, it puts a lot of pressure on characters. And this is one really in between war. The war is in the background. World War II is in the background. But the pressure is that of immigration and trying for a family, trying to stay together and succeed in tough times.
And I'm going to throw in here my favorite fiction book of
Please
the year.
Do.
Because it really, you know, I love to read, and I love to read a really wide and I'll say eclectic bunch of books, but this one has really stayed with me. It's called Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, and it's by Gail Honeyman, and it's her debut novel. And I just have to say, this book, I just felt so protective of the main character, Eleanor, and also other characters. You follow Eleanor through her daily life and in her thoughts, and you know that she's gone through something really horrendous, but the exposition is neither too abrupt or too plodding. And along the way, you see how both rewarding and challenging basic human interactions can be for someone who didn't grow up observing them. And I don't want to give away too much, but you really come to appreciate how fully fleshed out and complex this character is, and as are the people around her. And it's, you also have the sense that it's a fact that's lost on Eleanor herself until she can get past some of her own obstacles to see how much of a real, complete human being she is. It really touched me in ways that I just didn't expect it to.
Well, in this book also, if I'm not mistaken, I know it takes place in Glasgow, but it's also about her life as a finance clerk and,
yes,
and someone who she meets in the office. And so many of us who work in offices, you were saying that this is, you know, there's, you could feel the pain that she experiences and kind of the heartache.
Yes. Yes. And you do, I think one of the things that I enjoyed the most is that you also realize that even though Eleanor isn't able to necessarily sense the goodwill around her, there is actually a lot of goodwill around her. Even if people aren't quite sure how to relate to her, they're actually around her hoping to help her and reach her even when she's not aware of it. And that just kind of restored some, you know, faith in humanity for me as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's that faith in humanity that I'm also finding in so many of these books. Or at least, if not the faith in humanity, maybe questioning humanity mm-hmm. in some cases.
We're talking with Mark Rotella right now. He is a senior editor at Publishers Weekly. We are talking about the best books of 2017 and would love to have you join in with your picks at 800-642-1234. And Mark, you read a lot of books, obviously, but your specialty really is in nonfiction. And you've included a number of biographies in your list. Tell us about The Queen of Bebop, The Musical Lives of Sarah Vaughan by Elaine Hayes. And I want to say it says musical lives of, and I'm curious about that.
So Sarah Vaughan, who grew up in Newark, she was so this Elaine Hayes is a jazz biographer, a jazz writer, and Sarah Vaughan had many incarnations of music in her lives, and she's one who, at a time when women were not in control of their own career, I mean musicians in general, but especially an African American woman with many producers trying to direct her career, she maintained steadfast in what she wanted to do. I mean, she had many lovers and boyfriends, and I believe a couple of husbands, but it was throughout how her music changed throughout decades, a many decades-long career. And what I think Elaine does really nicely is kind of bring to life what it was, you know, Newark in the 1920s and 30s, the whole, you know, growing up a, you know, singer in the church, and how that kind of formed her early musical career. And then how later on, even throughout the 70s and 80s, how her music was still vital.
Who do you think would appreciate reading this biography of Sarah Vaughan?
You know, I think people interested in, I do want to say African-American history. I think history of jazz. And I think someone who just wants to read about a strong woman who, you know, did what she had to do and for her own career.
And sticking with biographies, you've included an in-depth look at the life and legacy of Mikhail Gorbachev, the last leader of the Soviet Union, aptly titled Gorbachev, by William Taubman. What was it that made you want to include that biography in your best list?
Well, I was a Russian literature major in college, and I worked at the Harriman Institute at Columbia University, which was an institute for, at the time, was studying the Soviet Union. And during that time, Gorbachev came into power, the wall came down. And it, to me, I always found Gorbachev fascinating. And William Taubman is just a wonderful writer of history and biographer. And this is just one. He really brought Gorbachev to life, but also in context with the, you know, coming out of the Cold War in light of the Soviet Union and in Russia, modern day Russia. And I thought it was just a really solid, big book. It's like just a classic biography. Mm-hmm.
And I'll let you in on a secret, Mark. I have a master's in Russian history.
Oh, nice.
So that one jumped out at me. Also, sticking with Russia, you also included Masha Gessen's The Future is History, How Totalitarianism Reclaimed Russia. And do you think there's increased interest in Russia given investigations into whether Russia meddled in elections and whatnot?
I definitely think so. And I definitely think in this book especially because of that. But it's also looking at totalitarianism and autocracy, which is, you know, many people here in the U.S. are you know, reading about and questioning. Also, it had to do with obviously 1917. This past year was the centennial of the Russian Revolution. So there are quite a few books on the Russian Revolution coming up. And this one kind of takes off from those who were born just after the Cold War and how they thought that the new Russian state was going to follow seven characters, and how the new Russian state was going to help them and change their lives. And by the end, not all of them, really very few of them, felt that it benefited their lives.
We're talking right now with Mark Rotella. He's senior editor at Publishers Weekly, and we are talking about the best books of 2017, and we would love to hear what made your list. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What authors stood out to you in 2017? What books are still on your reading list? You might not have gotten to them in 2017, but you're going to carry them over to read in 2018. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll pick up this conversation in just a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time. Right now, we're continuing our conversation about the best books of 2017 with Mark Rotella. He's a senior editor at Publishers Weekly. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What books really stood out to you this year? What were the books that you recommended to anyone who would listen? Were you drawn to any new genres you don't usually pick up? And were there any particular authors that really piqued your interest in 2017? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mark, Jeff from Dubuque, Iowa, called to say he couldn't put down John Feinstein's book, The First Major, The Inside Story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. And sports books, is that something that's a popular genre today?
It is. You know, and that one in particular, you know, so John Feinstein always seems to hit the nail right on the head. I mean, he comes out with books that focus on a specific era in the sport. And golf books are popular, obviously, in season. And it was really great to hear about that, your caller liked that book as well. But sports, baseball is always popular. I mean, they always do pretty well, especially in season. And golf, people love to read about golf.
I was really hoping you were going to say hit a hole in one instead of hit the nail on the head, but
I was going to.
Well, Ellery on Facebook loves to cook and loved two cookbooks this year. One is called Cook Japanese at Home, and the other is Tasting Georgia. And Ellery made the note, Georgia the country, not the state. And so those, the two very different parts of the world. You know, I actually know a lot of people who love to read cookbooks, like really read them. What makes a good reading cookbook?
So I think there's a sense of escape and being transported somewhere else, almost like a travel book. And here you have all kinds of sensories being piqued, you know, your taste sensories. And a really good cookbook author can especially someplace like the Georgia Cookbook, and that's becoming, that area of the world is becoming popular with foodies and with people who want to know a little bit more about it. And so there's a way of telling, mixing personal story with history. So you get a personal, you know, a first-person sense of what it's like to be there, how the food tastes, but also in the context of the evolution of the country, the changing of the country. So I think that's what does it. And I think in general, I think it said people actually cook 3 to 5 recipes from any one cookbook, and then they'll go someplace else.
That sounds about right.
And it's just really about, you know, fantasizing about what the next meal is or not. I know people who read cookbooks and keep them by their bedside table.
Yes, I do too. And and I have to say, a cookbook that I really enjoyed reading recently, and we had the fortune to interview him on the show, or them on the show, was A Grandfather's Lessons in the Kitchen with Shory by Jacques Pepin. And we talked with Jacques and his granddaughter Shory, and it's a charming book, and it was charming to get the sense of their relationship and how cooking has really been so fundamental to that family relationship, and, you know, just a joy to read.
Well, and I find Jacques Pepin and his books to be really earnest, and it's nothing flashy about it, but he's really welcoming. And as you know from the show, and when we've spoken with him, he's really personable and honest, and that comes across in the book. And I think that's something in a cookbook that people rely on, just like they would a favorite romance writer or science fiction writer. There's a certain sensibility that they will go to time and again, and I think this is the same with Jacques Pepin. Cookbooks. And his recipes work.
Yes, they do, and they're delicious. Yeah. Let's go to the phones, and Mark in Lake Pepin is up first. Mark, hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good. What would you like to talk about? What was your favorite book?
Well, I really loved a book of nonfiction that I read earlier this year. It was published by Grey Wolf Press, and it's called The Border by Kopka Kosobova. And she's a Bulgarian writer originally, though she lives in Scotland now. And she returned to Bulgaria to write about a series of trips that she took across the border between Bulgaria and Turkey. And she was both writing about the history of this region, but also writing about it as a place where there is so much activity because of the Syrian refugee crisis and people coming to Europe through this area. But she was also writing about it as what it was like during the Cold War, as a place where people from the East tried to cross into the West. And so the whole narrative of the book really spans a long period of time. And it talks about a region as having had a kind of very interesting and troubling relationship with sort of the movement of people across borders.
And our producer, Natalie Guyette, actually looked it up in the complete name so people can find it, is Border, A Journey to the Edge of Europe. And again, the author's name is Kopka Kosobova. And Mark Rotello, we'll turn to you, other Mark. You know, I think there is something to the edge of Europe. Bulgaria really is kind of on the edge of what people are usually familiar with or think of as Europe.
Right, exactly. I mean, it borders right there, Turkey and Greece. And so you've got three various, very different cultures coming in, you know, right at that one point. And it is true, this is a point of entry to a world that people don't really know about. And when a writer such as Kopka Kosobova is able to portray it, you know, is able to describe it in such a way, I mean, it's a really great, you know, it's a great experience. And Grey Wolf, and Mark, I'm happy to hear you reading Grey Wolf Press. They're really strong literary imprint that's just coming out with some wonderful books.
Thanks for that call, Mark. And Rich on Facebook says, best book of painful diary entries, which are painful and hilarious at the same time. No surprise with who the author is. David Sedaris is Theft by Finding, Diaries 1977 to 2002. I have to say, I did not know that was out there, and I will be making a beeline to find that.
Yeah. And David Sedaris is just, I love that he could just go back and tap into diary entries in the 1970s and still come up with this really witty, nutty perspective.
Right. And painful and hilarious sums up pretty much all of what he's written, I would say. So,
right, exactly.
That's great. And, you know, diaries obviously are a form of memoir. And Mark, one of your favorite memoirs of the year was chosen by Publishers Weekly, was Ants Among Elephants by Sujatha Githa.
Mm-hmm, right.
And what's that memoir about?
So Sujata grew up in India in as an untouchable, which is so low in the caste system that it's not even a caste. And the book is really a history of her family, not so much her until the end. But what I really enjoyed, and this is when I mentioned immigration earlier on, she is now a train engineer for the New York City subway station, so she drives the trains. And this is a book about her family and about 20th century India. And she talks about class, gender, religion. And these are really, you know, a lot of, you know, hotly contested political battles here. And I just really enjoyed this, and I enjoyed to know that she was a New York City subway engineer.
Yeah. As we start to wrap up a little bit, another memoir that I think got as much attention for what it meant for the author as for the memoir itself was You Don't Have to Say You Love Me by Sherman Alexie, which dealt a lot with his very difficult relationship with his mother, to the extent that talking about it day after day on a book tour, he actually had to cancel the rest of the appearances.
Yeah, exactly. And Sherman Alexie, he himself, his writing crosses so many genres, from children's to poetry, nonfiction, fiction. And yeah, this was a really, really brutally honest book to read, and I'm assuming to write. And talking about growing up on a reservation, and his relationship with his mother and also his father, but how the one with his relationship with his mother lingered and really formed him for better and for worse.
Well, Mark, we have barely scratched the surface of 2017, and we haven't even looked forward to 2018. I'm wondering if maybe you'll come back and talk with us another time about what to look for in the new year.
I'd be thrilled to, anytime.
All right. Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Mark Rotella is a senior editor at Publishers Weekly, where he's also the host of their PW radio show. He's an author and board member of the National Book Critics Circle and joined us to talk about the best books of 2017.